Due to technical difficulties, portions of this audio recording are not available. We apologize for any inconvenience, but thank you for taking the time to listen.
And you can read through the entire, most of the chapter and see a lot about it. What happens here in John chapter 6 is there's one of those moments where they run out of food, right? They got a bunch of people out there following Jesus. They're interested, but mostly they're there because he's been healing people. That's primarily what they're there for. It's not so much a question of faith with them, the majority. It's a question of sight. It's a question of what they have seen. And they like it. There's something there. There's power. There's help. All these things. And they get out there on the hillside this one day, and happened more than once, and they run out of food. They didn't think ahead enough, I guess. They just followed him out, and there they are. And you know what happens? There's a little bit of food. In verse 7, Philip says 200 penny worth of bread is not enough to feed all these people, not even to give them a little bit. And verse 8, one of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said unto him, there's a lad here which has 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. But what is that among so many people? And Jesus didn't answer the question, as he so often does not. Instead of getting into philosophical debate or trying to explain everything that's going on just in words, although he used words quite a bit, what does he do? He says, Jesus said, make them sit down. Just tell everybody to sit down. What a beautiful picture, right? I've discussed this with you quite a bit, and we've talked about this, and we talked about entering into his rest as we've studied through the book of Hebrews. And this is one of those moments where it's just that way, isn't it? We have 5 loaves of bread, a couple of fish, 5,000 plus people. All that on this, it's not even going to come close. And what does Jesus tell them to do? Get out and get some more food. Go into the towns and take the money, all the money we have, get some more and go find food and buy it up and get it back here. No, he just said, sit down. Tell everybody to sit down. Reminds me of Moses backed up against the Red Sea, you know, and one of his great moments of faith when he lifted up his rod and said, stand still. Stand still. It just is impactful to me. I know that Charlton Heston did it much stronger than that, you know. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. It might have been that way, but in my mind it goes like this. Stand still. Just chill. You know, basically, just take it easy. Let's see what God's going to do here. And that's what happens here on this hillside. We don't have any food. Here's a little bit. That's all we got, but no way that's enough. Look at all these people. And the answer from Jesus is, let's tell everybody to have a seat. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. Can you live like that? It's not easy for us, is it? But that's a picture. A picture of what we're coming into again. A picture of faith. Just listen to what God said. Take a seat. Let's see what God does. What does he do? Feeds everybody. Got leftovers. People got to take it home with them. I don't think they had Tupperware yet, but somehow they had to get, you know. Look down at verse 26 and 27. Jesus answered, talking to the people, he's like, I got to explain what's going on. He says, here, verily I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, because you ate the food. They followed him again after all of this, and he's like, you're not here because you really believe in me. You're here to get more food, you know. Verse 27, labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath the Father sealed. And they said unto him, what great words these are. And what a great transition into chapter 11 of Hebrews as well. They said unto him, what shall we do that we might work the works of God? Doesn't that sound, I was going to say religious, it does. But I mean, more than that, doesn't it sound spiritual? What should I do to be a Christian? That was your testimony this morning about how you became a believer in Jesus Christ. What did you do? Did you go feed the world? Did you usher in world peace? I mean, did you even help anybody right at that moment? Who knows, right? But was that the essence of your salvation experience? Or did you just sit down at his feet and say, Lord, feed me? I believe that's how it happened. I believe that's how it always happens. I know that's how it always happens. He said, you came for more food. Let's be honest, people. You just came because you thought you were going to get something. And they said, no. We're very spiritual people. You don't understand. Now, if you have some more great words to impart to us, let's hear them. What do we need to do? You're so smart. They're always doing that to Jesus, you know, these guys. They're always doing that to Jesus. What? You're so smart. You tell us. You tell us what we're missing. We do all these other things. We already have a religion. We're already established in our faith system. What else do we need to do? And the words of Jesus are as clear as anything could ever be on the idea of faith. 28, they said, what shall we do that we might work the works of God? Verse 29, Jesus answered and said unto them, this is the work of God, I'll tell you, that ye believe on him who he hath sent. That's not enough. That can't be enough. That's too easy. That's too simple. Can't be. No. I'm sure I have to be baptized also. To be saved? To come into the fellowship of God and to begin to work the works of God, to be used of God, you have to be baptized? No, to become a member of this church, you have to, sure. It's scriptural that you should. All those things are great. But does that make you saved? Does that make you more saved? Does that make you a better spiritual kind of person? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. He said, there's one thing you need to do. Just one thing. Just believe. All you have to do is believe. I'm hearing blinging, so I'm afraid it's going to go away. And they said in verse 30, what sign do you show us? What kind of, prove it. Let's go into court here. Prove it. You're saying all we have to do is believe you. That's all. That's all we got to do. That's it. Can't be that simple. But, okay, give us a sign. Jews are bad about that. Still are. Okay? So are we sometimes, aren't we? If God would just, right? Instead of, God already said this is different stuff. All right, going on. They said, what sign do you show us? Verse 31. We had a sign back with Moses. Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. They weren't lying there. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven. But my Father, and oh my, did he nail it already right there with those words. He didn't just say God. He said, my Father. He didn't even say, in this case, our Father. He declares to them who he is in clear, undeniable words. My Father. Father gave you that. This is the one who had just fed all those people himself. And now he's saying, you remember back when the manna came? My Father did that. Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. And they're like, that sounds good. Give us evermore this kind of bread. Jesus said, that's me. I am the bread of life. I am your sustenance. I am your spiritual life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. And so that whole passage continues on with it, and it's beautiful. And again, he says down in verse 48, I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread that cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, they didn't understand this stuff. They didn't get it. They're still thinking like religious people. They're still thinking we've got to have something to do, and we've got to have some signs from God. We have all these confirmations and all of these things, and then we will believe. Then we will believe. And Jesus said, I'm the bread of life. If you don't eat of me, they didn't understand that. They thought he was talking cannibalism. But he was talking about things in the spiritual world. And we can see that, and Hebrews brought it out with the tabernacle and the whole picture of the tabernacle. And we get to that part in the tabernacle about the showbread and, And I just have to say, it looks like probably the first bagels right there. I don't know. Some of the pictures actually show a rod sticking up out of the table, and it's like a donut, like a hole in the middle, and they slide them down on there. I suppose that so it doesn't fall off or whatever. But there was always that bread in there, the show bread, the show bread. The reason it's called show bread is it's like a remembrance when you walk in. All those things are reminders. All of those things are pictures. And then the show bread is a picture of we need Him. We need God at all times. And so it had to be full of these beautiful bagels all the time. They're not bagels. But of this bread all the time. All right. With this view in nature, we get a sense in the meaning of it. It was, of course, a ritualistic thing that God implemented, but He did that to show us truth. He didn't do it just so that we can work the works of God. We come in here and we do certain things that are ritualistic in a sense. We have a baptism, we have the Lord's Supper. These are things that God commanded us to do. But they in and of themselves are not the end all. They are just a picture and a way to remind us and to teach us of the truths that Jesus Christ came to show us. So we have the showbread. And of course we get down here to chapter 11. And this may seem a little strange to you the way that I've put this, but just really briefly, and we're not going to take the time this morning to go through all of these different people in Hebrews chapter 11, but if you have your Bible still open there, if you want to turn back to Hebrews chapter 11, I do want to look at a few things. And you go through down through these different personalities. We get through Abel, we get through Abraham, we get through Enoch who's in there, and all these people of faith. But there's something that each one of these have in common as they're listed here in this list of faith, of people of faith. Yes, we applaud their faith. We do. We applaud their faith because it results in God being able to work through their lives. Yes? Faith, then, that thing which is the substance of things that are still out in the future and the evidence that shows us the reality of these things, faith was operating in their lives. So that makes them great Christians, right? That makes them heroes to us. In a sense, yes. But look over, I want you to look over in the chapter, and towards the end of the chapter, and look at we'll start in verse 29 just to give us context there. By faith, they, the Israelites, passed through the Red Sea. We've been talking about that in Sunday school. As by dry land, which the Egyptians, a saying to do, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were come past about 7 days. All these wonderful things that people who believed in God, God was able to use them to do. Now listen to this one, verse 31. By faith, the harlot Rahab. Uh-oh. Those aren't words we want to think together about, do we? By faith, the harlot Rahab. Oh my, what is going on here? We've gone through all of these people that we lift up as heroes of the faith and how they left home, Abraham did, without knowing where he was going. Going to a city that he'd never been to, a place he'd never been to. And that was great faith. We admire that kind of faith. And then we have a person here who's a terrible sinner. And she is regarded as such yet in this passage by the language, the harlot, Rahab. And yet she's here in this list of people who did something by faith. By faith, the harlot Rahab perished not. That was one pretty good achievement because that was when the walls of Jericho fell down and pretty much everybody there got killed. Everybody except Rahab and her family, you see. So her faith, her trust, her belief that Jehovah was the one true God, that she somehow gained by seeing what God had done through Israel and then hearing it from the mouths of the men who went in there, and she believed all of these things. And by that, she survived. That's a good start, right? She perished not with them that believed not when she received the spies with peace. And we know the rest of that story, that she not only survived, but she thrived, and she became a very real part of God's picture that He brings to us. What a beautiful, just that simple thought. There's a whole lot involved in it, but that simple thought that here we have, you know, we think of Abraham, we think of, and on down the line, Moses, and we think of even Enoch who walked with God and then was not because God took him. What a man of faith. What great faith these people had. And then we have a harlot who had nothing to give. Absolutely nothing to give to God. What is she going to do? come to God and say, look, I've been doing this all my life, and so I have a little money saved up, maybe, you know. She had nothing to give to God. She was just a poor, pitiful sinner. Just like Abel. The reason Abel had to make those sacrifices, because he was a sinner. Just like Enoch, because he walked here on this earth, like the rest of us. Great man of faith, certainly, great example, but nevertheless, a man who was a sinner like the rest of us, for all have sinned and come short. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Abraham, Moses, on down the line you go. Great men of faith, and yet still no different from Rahab the harlot. As far as what she needed is the same thing they needed. It wasn't that they had such great faith that they were able to do this great works that made them great people. The fact was their faith was a gift from God in the first place. If you look at Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, you'll see this very clearly, because it says, for by grace are ye saved, and that not of yourselves, for by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It's the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Now, here's the picture. We tend to lift people up who have great faith. We should have great faith. But we have to understand what that really even means. It means that God gives us, by his grace, the ability to believe what he has said to us. And we exercise that faith and say, yes, God, I believe you. You're right. That is all it is, no matter who. We have Rahab. Oh, if you look down through the list, too, right after this, you have Gideon. Gideon was one of those complicated characters, wasn't he? He was up and down and all over the place, and yet God used him. And then Barak, holy mackerel. You want to go back and read about him. There's some confusion going on back in that story, right? We won't get into all of it right now, but he was not a Moses, all right? Let's put it that way. He was not so right down the line and everything what God says all the time, but yet God used him. God used him. And then you want to look at one that really messes us up. A fellow by the name of Samson is mentioned in this very same chapter right here in this hall of faith. Samson? Samson? Really? Man, he was all over the place, wasn't he? You read his story and you just, it's hard to think of faith very much when you're reading the story. But it was there. He just never let it operate completely in his life. But you can see it here and there, you know, and a little belief in this, a little belief in that, and like, and he's trying. You know, you can see him trying. Do you ever feel that way? God, I'm trying. and you wonder, is it enough? I don't have the same faith that so-and-so has. I don't have the same faith that these other people have. I just don't have that kind of faith. But here's Samson, in the hall of faith of the Bible, who died in just a horrible kind of way, really. You think of it, he had his eyes gouged out, he's a prisoner, he's all chained up. All because he went with the wrong woman. Right here. Went with the wrong woman. I'm not saying she is, but be careful, right? He went with the wrong woman and everything just went. You women, you have more power than you understand, more influence than you can even possibly imagine, I think, sometimes over men. Be careful how you use it. She used it for his destruction, ultimately. Cut off his hair. We all know that. And it was, I don't know, all that business. But that was a symbol of a vow that he'd made to God. And he allowed himself to get to that point. And yet at the end of his life, tragically in a lot of ways, but the one thought that he had was, God, use me one more time. Just use me one more time. I'm ready to die if I can do it in your service. But you know how he pushed the pillars of that temple, caused the whole thing to collapse on their big shindig that was going on in there. And here he is in the hall of faith. Is it because of his works? Was it because of Abraham's works? Was it because of Moses' works? Was it because of Rahab's works? No. There were works that came out of their faith. But the essence, the substance of what allowed them to be used by God was that they said, God, I believe you. I really just believe you. It's that simple. That's what Jesus said. I'm the bread of life. You want to work the works of God? Just listen to me. Just believe what I say. Believe in me that my Father has actually sent me. An exercise I love to do with people when I'm trying to explain faith to them is I'll do that with you right now. Everybody pick your feet up real quick. Pick them up. Well, come on. You can do it. Come on. Indulge me. Pick your feet up just for a moment. All right, you can put them back down. You're probably tired already. Did you think the pew was going to fall? I hope not. These are pretty good pews. You had faith in those pews. You had faith they would not fall. You trusted those pews. Jesus said, there's food coming. You got a few loaves and a couple of fishes. And you just need to sit down. Moses said, hey, stand still. Take it easy. God's still in control. Watch the salvation that he brings. You want to know what faith is? It's that simple. The substance of things hoped for. The essence, the reality of the things that we can't even see. Lean on the everlasting arms of God. If you don't know for sure that he's your Savior, you don't need to be doing the works of God. Don't even go there. Ephesians 2 again, verses 8 and 9. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It's the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Verse 10 says, but we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works. He'll work through us if we just offer him a vessel of faith. God, give me the faith to believe what you say and to act upon it. That's the whole story for all of us. Father, thank you again for a day to come together. Thank you for your word that teaches us so much that we need so desperately, so much more than our own efforts, so much more than any of our efforts ever could possibly be. But Father, we need you. We need to be able to believe in you. We need to be able to sit down and watch you do what you will do through us. We need to be